Joe Pop, VOA. Today is Monday, November 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Protesters outraged over new COVID-19 restrictions take to the streets of many European cities.
This has been going on for 2 years, and there's no end in sight. Something new is announced every day, and we don't know what we can believe anymore.
Poland's leader warns the migrant crisis on the border with Belarus could be a foreshadowing of something much worse to come.
We know of diplomatic and official contacts in Belarus and Russia with Uzbekistan and Afghanistan, and there will be an attempt to use the crisis in Afghanistan as the next stage of the migration crisis.
And Sudan's military leaders reinstate the deposed prime minister. But is that enough for Sudanese citizens? We'll have these stories and more next. People took to the streets in several European countries over the weekend to protest tighter coronavirus restrictions. As parts of the EU see record-spiking cases, elected officials in some of those nations have begun limiting public life for the unvaccinated. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Carrying a banner that read, "Together in Freedom," protesters marched through Belgium's capital, Brussels, Sunday against tightening measures to curb the spread of COVID-19. The crowd lobbed smoke bombs and firecrackers to protest moves such as barring unvaccinated people from bars and restaurants. Friday, on the streets of Rotterdam in the Netherlands, protests turned violent as demonstrators torched police cars after the government announced plans for coronavirus lockdown measures like so-called corona passes that show proof of vaccination or recovery from infection. Police used water cannons and opened fire on the crowd in what the city's mayor called an orgy of violence. 5 police officers were injured there, with at least 28 people detained and some hospitalized with suspected gunshot wounds. By Saturday, fireworks became part of the mix as people protested a New Year's Eve fireworks ban to avoid putting added pressure on hospitals dealing with surges of COVID-19. Daily infection rates in the Netherlands remain at their highest since the start of the pandemic. Meanwhile, in Austria, where the daily COVID death rate recently tripled, roughly 35,000 people protested in Vienna following Chancellor Alexander Schallenberg's announcement that the entire population would have to be vaccinated by February. With roughly 2/3 of the population fully vaccinated, Austria has one of the lowest inoculation rates in all of Europe, so the government introduced a national lockdown. Protesters say they want their freedom back.
This has been going on for 2 years, and there's no end in sight. Something new is announced every day, and we don't know what we can believe anymore. That's the situation.
Austria's far-right Freedom Party organized the demonstration along with the anti-vaccine MFG Party and another far-right group. The Freedom Party leader was unable to attend after testing positive for COVID-19. Some Austrians say another lockdown was inevitable.
There's no other way, even though I don't like it. In literature, you can read that pandemics last at least 3 years, and we should avoid that.
At a news conference Friday in Berlin, Germany's acting health minister said hospitals were overflowing with COVID cases and may need to transfer patients to neighboring countries. Germany's head of infectious disease prevention said the COVID situation is out of control.
This is no longer about individual outbreaks. The whole of Germany is one big outbreak. This is a national emergency. We have to pull the emergency brake now. The thresholds have been exceeded.
As neighboring Austria prepares for a nationwide lockdown on Monday, German officials say they cannot rule out doing the same, even for the vaccinated. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
On Monday, Germany's health minister said the rapid rise in coronavirus cases means it's likely that everyone in the country who's not vaccinated will have caught COVID-19 by the end of the winter, and some of those will die. Official figures showed more than 30,000 new confirmed cases in Germany over the past 24 hours, an increase of about 50% compared to 1 week ago. As people in the United States prepare to gather for the Thanksgiving holiday on Thursday, health authorities continue to push for vaccination to protect against COVID-19. Officials say all inoculated adults can get a booster shot. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
People are expected to travel at pre-pandemic levels this week as they visit loved ones for Thanksgiving, which kicks off the holiday season in the United States. COVID-19 infection rates are rising in the U.S., however, and health officials just endorsed all vaccinated adults receiving a booster shot. But gathering comes with risks. with 26% of Americans, including those 5 and older, yet to receive one shot, officials say. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the White House's chief medical advisor. He spoke to ABC this week.
If you're vaccinated, and hopefully you'll be boosted too, and your family is, you can enjoy a typical Thanksgiving meal, Thanksgiving holiday with your family. There's no reason not to do that. The thing we are concerned about is the people who are not vaccinated, because what they're doing is they're the major source of the dynamics of the infection in the community.
Some strategies to increase the vaccination rate are running into roadblocks. The Biden administration said it would pause for now plans to implement a workplace vaccine mandate for employers with 100 or more workers, pending a court challenge. Last week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, signed a law imposing fines on businesses and hospitals that require inoculation against COVID-19 without alternatives. And Disney World, a big employer in the state, put its worker vaccination policy on hold. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis spoke while signing the bill.
And I think it's something that's going to make a big, big difference for an awful lot of people. We are respecting people's individual freedom in this state.
The Biden administration's efforts to tie employment with vaccination has become a political issue, some say. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, appeared on CBS Face the Nation.
Now it's become a political fight at a national level, unfortunately. You're going to see some governors trying to position themselves on this issue, like you've seen in Florida. And you're going to see the federal government, the Biden administration, now fighting those states.
While efforts to vaccinate more people continue, some are ready to loosen rules around mask wearing. The mayor of Washington, D.C. said the city's indoor mask mandate would be lifted this week. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Poland's prime minister warned on Sunday that the migrant crisis on the Belarus border may be a prelude to something much worse. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson reports.
Poland's leader warned on Sunday that the migrant crisis on its border with Belarus could be a prelude to something worse. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki said the crisis was far from over as he toured Estonia, Lithuania and Latvia. The EU has accused Belarus of flying in thousands of people from the Middle East and pushing them to cross into the EU states in response to European sanctions. Morawiecki said the situation in Afghanistan could be utilized next.
We know of diplomatic and official contacts of Belarus and Russia with Uzbekistan and Afghanistan, and there will be an attempt to use the crisis in Afghanistan as the next stage of the migration crisis. And the migration crisis is just one part of the great political crisis in which Lukashenko, with his real principle, and I think nobody has doubts that this is President Putin, will continue such actions.
Minsk, which denies fomenting the crisis, cleared a migrant camp near the border on Thursday and started to repatriate some people to Iraq. Despite this, Poland's border guard alleges that Belarus is still transporting hundreds of migrants to the frontier. Poland's leader says things could escalate, pointing to an increased Russian military presence close to Ukraine, as well as in Belarus and Russia's Kaliningrad enclave, which borders Poland and Lithuania. A recent poll shows that more than half of Poles are worried the crisis on the border could lead to an armed conflict. Hundreds took to the street of Warsaw on Saturday to demand help for the migrants. About 10 migrants are believed to have died on the Poland-Belarus border, where a frigid winter has set in.
That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson. After declaring a state of emergency and ending Sudan's power-sharing government with a military takeover on October 25th, military leaders in that country have reinstated deposed Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Sudan's military and civilian leaders have reached a deal to reinstate the country's prime minister, who was deposed in a coup last month. According to the deal, which has now been signed, government officials and politicians arrested since the October coup will now be released. The company's top general, Abdel Fattah Burhan, announced that the reinstated prime minister, Abdalla Hamdok, will lead an independent cabinet until elections can be held. It remains unclear how much power the government would hold. It would still remain under tight military Patriot oversight. The coup has drawn international criticism for stalling what many hoped would be a chance at democracy after the fall of longtime autocrat Omar al-Bashir 2 years ago. I'm Karen Chamas.
Residents of the Sudanese capital Khartoum are expressing mixed reactions over Sunday's agreement between General Abdel Fattah el-Burhan and Prime Minister Hamdok. Some citizens say Hamdok has betrayed the Sudanese revolutionaries by accepting his reinstatement, while others welcome the deal, saying it may stop the bloodshed in the country. Michael Atit has the details from Khartoum.
The signing of the agreement coincided with an already planned protest by pro-democracy groups to condemn the killing of peaceful protesters in Khartoum last week. After hearing about the new agreement, protesters marched towards the presidential palace where the signing ceremony took place to voice their position to it. Security forces used tear gas to disperse protesters as they approached the presidential palace. Some Sudanese say they were shocked to hear that Hamdok agreed to return to his position as prime minister and continue the partnership with the army. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via a messaging application in Khartoum, artist and a political activist Osman Haider says he categorically rejects the agreement. He describes the deal as illegal, saying it violates the constitutional declaration that established the transitional government after the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. He says the Sudanese people are fed up with the 3 decades of military rule in the country.
This agreement is regenerating the same dictatorship or the same military council that killed our brothers in the street. We are not going to accept any appeasement. Our demands are very clear. Hold down the bloody military council, and we want to make the complete change in our country, not just changing faces with another faces.
Under the new agreement, Hamdok will lead a civilian government of technocrats during a transitional period until July 2023, followed by a national election. Sudanese political parties have rejected the deal, saying it violates the constitution and that any agreement with the military will not resolve the country's crisis. Khartoum resident Sahar al-Jazuli, a member of Abu Adam's resistance committee, also rejected the new political agreement. Al-Jazuli says she was surprised to hear that Hamdok has betrayed the Sudanese people by agreeing to work with the military leaders. Al-Jazuli says she had a mixed reactions last night, but despite this, she still have a high hopes. We no longer trust the politicians, even if they try to justify their actions, she says. This is a game. We will continue to offer our sacrifice, and our objectives, demands, and ambitions will keep on growing day by day, Al-Jazuli says. But Khartoum resident Ammar Adam Said has a different opinion. Speaking via phone, Adam describes the deal as timely and prevents the country from slipping into a chaos. He says Sudan has suffered economic hardships for a long time, adding that he thinks Hamdok is capable of finding a solution to them soon. Adam says he thinks what happened between Hamdok and al-Burhan is right. We are in a dire need of assistance. We need our economy to be restored, and we need our friends to help us realize these dreams. I am hopeful that our country will get stable soon and be developed, Adam says. The agreement allows the release of all political detainees who were arrested by the military following last month's dissolution of cabinet and suspension of some articles of the constitution. The Sudanese Sovereign Council announced on its official Facebook page last evening that 4 political detainees, including the deputy chairman of the SPLM North, Yasser Arman, were released. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Prime Minister Hamdok said on Monday that maintaining economic gains from the past 2 years was among the reasons he decided to return to his post. In an interview with Reuters at the Khartoum residence, where he had been held under house arrest, Hamdok said he believed a technocratic government would have a chance to improve living standards. You're listening to VOA News.
Join me on the next Straight Talk Africa as we discuss the return of Africa's stolen art.
France repatriated 26 looted colonial-era artifacts to Benin. Now museums in Europe and the U.S. are rethinking what to do with their African art collections. We'll discuss art restitution and reparations. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
The U.S. Senate Majority Leader wants to get President Biden's social agenda spending bill done by the end of the year and sees negotiations within the party ahead. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
The Senate Majority Leader wants to get President Biden's social agenda spending bill done by Christmas and sees negotiations within the party ahead. Senator Chuck Schumer says he knows his own Democratic Party is diverse.
It runs from Bernie Sanders to Joe Manchin. But I tell our party, as leader of the party, that in unity is our strength. If any one person insists that unless they get a certain provision that someone else can't be with, the bill fails.
He says so far on all major bills, Democrats have stayed unified, even without Republican votes.
I think that we're in very good shape to get 50 votes.
Schumer also wants to make sure a provision to cap insulin at $35 a month remains in the bill. His comments come days after the House passed the $1.9 trillion plan. I'm Julie Walker.
U.S. passage of the $1.9 trillion spending bill came last week after months of back-and-forth wrangling with President Biden's Democratic Party. Matthew Kerbel, a professor of political science at Villanova University in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, tells me it is still unclear if the sweeping legislation, which was scaled back from its original $3.5 trillion, will pass in the Senate and what its impact will be on elections next year.
Nobody ever knows what's going to happen in the Senate. So it would be foolish to say that anybody is certain of the outcome. What we do know is that if we back up and we look at the history of this measure, it has from the beginning been paired with the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which was passed by the House a week and a half ago. And when the House passed that measure, progressives, particularly the Progressive Caucus, understood that they were giving up their leverage to shape the measure going forward. Basically, the way it worked very quickly is that the bipartisan infrastructure bill was negotiated by, among others, a couple of Senate Democrats who have been holdouts on the Build Back Better bill. And so while their bipartisan infrastructure bill passed the Senate many months ago, it was being held back in the House until they came around and agreed to terms on the Build Back Better bill, the one that passed the House on Friday. But those negotiations are not done yet. So when the infrastructure bill passed the House, progressives relinquished whatever leverage they would have on future negotiations. It now goes to the Senate. President Biden has promised progressives that the votes are there in the Senate, or the votes will be there in the Senate for this to pass. We obviously are not privileged to private negotiations. We're not privileged to exactly what the president may or may not have promised. But we do know that it's going to move forward, that the Senate is a more Byzantine place than the House, which means that the process for getting it through the Senate is going to be longer. It's going to take more time. We also know that it's possible to amend things in the Senate far more easily than they can be amended in the House. And with there still being objections from at least Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, possibly Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, between the two of them, it's quite possible that maybe even likely that there will be changes made to this bill when it gets to the Senate. So,
which means then if that happens, if it's changed, then that has to be reconciled once again, right?
Well, there's really no more time to reconcile it, and really the Senate's going to have the last word on this, because any changes that are made in the Senate are really going to be permanent changes. Basically, it would be Manchin, Sinema, or whoever else might object, saying this is what we're willing to accept, bottom line. So I think what we're going to see happen is if it passes the Senate, it'll go back to the House for another vote, because both houses have to approve the same language, but I don't think it'll be changed.
Did the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office scoring have anything to do with the final vote that happened on Friday?
Well, that was the reason for delaying the vote until Friday. Originally, House leadership had planned to vote on the Build Back Better bill and the infrastructure bill together, as had been the plan for a very long time. These two bills were moving through the legislative process together. Then at the last minute, several House Democrats balked And they said, we need to see a CBO score. Basically, we want to make sure that this bill doesn't add to the deficit, doesn't add appreciably to the debt.
Let's say in your crystal ball and the Senate, let's be optimistic for the Democrats, let's say it passes. How much of an impact will that have on the upcoming midterm elections? And will it, do you think, have the possibility of keeping Democrats in power?
My crystal ball hasn't been working very well this year, but it's in the shop for repairs. But if I can say this much, that it would certainly be far better for Democrats' prospects in the midterms to have something to run on than not. So I think there's really no question that passing this bill gives Democrats something to take back to quite a few constituencies and say, we delivered on our promises. And I think it's important to remember that the individual components of both this bill and the infrastructure bill poll very well. So these are very, largely very popular measures. It's then up to Democrats to be able to sell that to the country. I think it's fair to say that while the individual measures poll very well, most people don't really know what's in this legislation, and you wouldn't expect them to, because it really hasn't been clear what's going to end up in this legislation, what's going to come out of this legislation. That's still a work in progress.
That was Matthew Kerbel, a professor of Villanova University in Pennsylvania. He was speaking to me about the future of the nearly $2 trillion U.S. spending bill and its potential impact on next year's elections. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. The Kremlin on Sunday accused the West of artificially whipping up tensions around Ukraine, with statements suggesting that Russia was poised to launch an attack on its neighbor. Russia said Washington and its partners should stop what it calls Ukraine's military buildup near Russia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said on Saturday that Washington has real concerns that are widely shared with leaders in Europe over Russian activities at the Ukrainian border. Ukraine has said it feared Russia may be preparing an attack. NATO and the U.S. have made similar statements for nearly 2 weeks, calling recent Russian troop movements near Ukraine unusual. Former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appeared in court on Monday to face a key prosecution witness in his corruption trial. Netanyahu has pleaded not guilty to several charges, including bribery, breach of trust, and fraud. Prosecutors allege that Netanyahu, who served as prime minister for a dozen years until June, offered media tycoons regulatory favors in exchange for positive news coverage. The former prime minister smiled under his face mask as he walked into court to hear his former spokesman, Nir Hefetz, testify against him. Hefetz had said Netanyahu spends at least as much of his time on media as he spends on security matters. India has lifted its ban on construction as air quality improved a bit over the weekend. Delhi's air quality index dropped to 303 on scale of 500. That's down from 499 nearly a week ago, when a thick haze hung over the Indian capital of more than 200 million people. The current levels still indicate very poor conditions, according to government monitoring agencies. But Delhi's Minister for Environment, Forest and Wildlife Development says air quality is slowly improving. As people around the world start to prepare for coming holidays, experts say pandemic factors are just one reason for higher prices on Christmas trees for 2021. AP correspondent Jennifer King has the story.
The American Christmas Tree Association, representing retailers, says lumber, trucking, and fuel prices are up. Some stores say they're still waiting for shipments from China. People seeking holiday cheer during the pandemic drove over-the-top sales for Christmas trees last year. So now Ed Dart, the owner of a Christmas tree farm on Long Island, tells Newsday newspaper they sold out of mature trees last year and also sold many that weren't mature yet, leaving the farm with fewer trees to sell this year. Sidney Belushian is a tree seller in Clovis, California.
We have a shortage anyway of trees.
He told KFS that the tree growing industry was hard hit by record summer heat in some areas of Oregon.
The crop was cut about 40%.
I'm Jennifer King.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.